I want to teach on fruit today. Three fruits. Hairdressers. No. In Matthew 7. Go to Matthew 7. What is a fruit? What is an edible fruit? A berry? Huh? Is banana a fruit? Is a tomato a fruit? If you see a plant, how can you tell what kind of plant it is? I mean, if you're not a college person. It's a Deoluxa ermina. But what's the easiest way to tell what kind of tree you're looking at or whatever? Just play with me on this, okay? So, it would be to look at the fruit, right? You can tell what someone's about or what something's about by its fruit, by what's apparent about it. Not a parent, but a parent. In Matthew 7, verse 17. I guess you can tell something about a person by their parents. But in Matthew 7, verse 17, it says, "Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit." If a tree's good, it brings forth what kind of fruit? Good fruit. But a corrupt tree, if the tree's bad, it brings forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. If something's bad on the inside, what comes out of it? Bad. If something's good on the inside, what comes out of it? Like, what's a bad fruit? The deadly, what? Leaves? Poison berries. That's right. If there's poison on the inside, what kind of fruit would come out? And that's the thing about fruit. What's on the inside is what comes out. And that's what I want to go over today. It says, a good tree, verse 18, cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire, wherefore by what they say they are, ye shall know them. Is that what that says? By their what? By their fruits. By their fruits. By what's apparent about them, you shall know them. And there are certain things that are apparent about believers, people who believe in God. And I want to go over three of those tonight. So go to, or today, or this afternoon. Go to Galatians 5. When you see believers, people who walk with God, these things are just obvious about them, these fruits. In Galatians 5, it's like one of the first things you see. Cherries, bananas, and kumquats. Galatians 5. Verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. There's more, but those are the ones I want to go over today. The fruit of the Spirit, did I say Galatians 5:22? Is love, joy, and peace. When someone walks with God, walks by the Spirit, what you notice about them is that they're mean, nasty, and cruel, right? Is that what that says? Well, that's in my Bible, the better translation. No. When somebody walks with God, what you notice about them is they have great love, they have great joy, and they have great peace. Plus those other ones there if you want to read those to yourselves tonight, later on when you get home. That's what's apparent about them. They have a lot of love, they have a lot of joy, and a lot of peace. And that's why it's worth it to walk with God and use that spirit you have and walk like a believer, because that's what becomes apparent in your life. That's what you have in your life. You have a lot of love in your life. You have great joy in your life, and you have great peace in your life. So it's worth it to learn how to walk with God and use the spirit that you have and be a wonderful believer. It's very valuable. You couldn't give a more valuable gift during the holidays, could you? The salad shooter and the the vacuum that never loses suction. That would be a good gift, right?
Other vacuums lose suction. I dedicated my life to the vacuum that doesn't lose suction.
Those are nice for a while, but who wouldn't want a lot of love in their life? Just great joy in their life and great peace in their life. Those come from walking with God. The first one is love, and you can go to 1 John 3. Love is simply caring about others. You know, having other people be important to you. You ever been in love? Well, that's what it's like, only you decide to be that way. Maybe not with the gushy feelings. You don't fall in love, you decide to love. There's a difference, right? You can fall in love, but you might fall out. This is a decision. It's just you decide that people are important to you, that you care about them. In 1 John 3, And with a believer, these are just apparent. It's apparent in a believer's life that they have a lot of love because God is love and they walk with God. In 1 John 3, verse 16, it says, "Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he made us lay down our life." No, he did something for us. And that's what love is. Love is you do something for other people for free. Sometimes I've heard it called a rose without thorns. It's a wonderful thing with no pricks, you know, or nothing bad about it. If you love someone with the love of God, it's free. They don't have to earn it or deserve it. It's free. If someone loves you with the love of God, you know they care about you, and you didn't do anything to earn it, and you can't do anything to lose it. And that's what believers are like. They care about people whether they deserve it or not. That's one of the fruits of walking by the Spirit and knowing God and everything like that. "Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." The more you understand God and his Son, Jesus Christ, the more you get to know them, the more you become like them, and you start to lay down your lives for people. And a part of the love of God is you'll sacrifice cats for other people. No. You'll sacrifice some of your stuff, a part of your time, just to help other people. You'll miss Lost 1 week, which I know it isn't on. I know it's not on. But if somebody needs help, you'll drop what you're doing. You'll drop your macrame project or something like that. And you'll sacrifice of your time. You'll do things you don't want to do to help people and to take care of people. That's a part of the love of God, because you care so much about them. And it says, verse 17, "But whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" See, that's not the love of God. If you see that someone needs something, when you love with the love of God, you take care of it. You ask God what you can do. You check your resources if there's anything you can do. But you want to take care of it. And that's what it's like being around believers. That's why it's so nice to be around people like you, because if I ever need anything, I always know people care about me. They'll try to help me. That's a cool thing. That's a nice commodity to have in your life. Even better than the vacuum that sucks always and stuff like that. Verse 18, "My little children," that's God talking to us, his kids, "let us not love in word, neither in tongue." So there's no French kissing in the love of God, okay? I'm sorry, everybody, even the young girls, know what that is. It's kissing a guy with a beret. That's what it is, okay? Let's not just say, "Love you, bro, but Lost is on," right? Or, "I really want to help you, but my macrame is drying," or something like that. "Let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." Let's really love each other. Let's go out of our way to take care of each other. And that's one of the fruits. That's one thing you notice about a believer. It's like they have this weird care for people. It's like they care about people. They care about you. They care about me. And that's why it's so nice to be around them. Look at Luke 10. That's a fruit. That's something that's just apparent in a believer's life, that they care about people. They even care about people they don't know, or people who maybe have hurt their feelings in the past or something. And that's because they have the nature of God. They take on the nature of God. They get to know their Father, and that's the way God is like, and they get to experience God's love for them, and they just reflect that to others. In Luke 10, one day we're going to have Bibles where you can just say Luke 10 and it'll turn themselves.
Luke 10.
Verse 30. "And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves." That was bad luck. He fell among thieves. But it means that, thieves got him. Some posse got him or something like that. "Which stripped him of his raiment, took his clothes, and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead." So this guy was walking down the road. Some thieves came up, took his clothes, beat him up, so he was hurt, and they left him half dead. So the situation in there is a guy who's beat up lying in the road. Now, what would you do if you saw someone beat up lying in the road? Oh, so I don't have to read the rest of it then, right? Well, first of all, there's a priest who sees him, and by chance there came down a certain priest that way. Priests represent God, so you know what this guy's going to do, right? He was too busy going to fellowship to help the person. He had to go to a fellowship so he wouldn't help the person, right? No, look, there was a certain... What verse am I in? Help me now. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, what did he do? No time to help you, I have to go pray. You understand? And likewise, a Levite, that guy, that whole tribe was supposed to serve God, and likewise, a Levite, when he was at the place, this guy was a little more compassionate. He looked at him for a while. look at that. He's half dead, but a positive person would say he's half alive, so let's go. He's, looked at him for a while and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, and that's like saying a slime ball in that culture, you know, a guy that everyone would look down on, not a priest who was high status in that society, not a Levite who was high status, you know, in the religious society, but a Samaritan who was like, the Samaritans worship God, but also other things too. They were just looked down upon. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. He saw this guy in trouble who needed help, and he had compassion. He wanted to help him. He had the desire to help him. And went to him and bound up his wounds. Wait a minute. He probably had to be somewhere too. You know, this took up his time. He was on a journey. He probably wanted to be somewhere. But he took the time to bind up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, you know, his own stuff, and set him on his own beast. I mean, he had to walk. And brought him to an inn, and even paid for a room for him. All that of his own resources for a guy he didn't know at all. You know who's telling this parable, right? Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is telling this. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence for a stranger who might never, ever thank him or ever do anything for him, ever. For a stranger, took out 2 pence and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. He totally cared about that guy for no good reason, except that the guy needed help. Which now of these 3 thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among thieves? And he said, he that showed mercy on him. And this is the point I want to make today. Then said Jesus unto him, what? Go and do thou likewise. Be like that guy. That's what we need in this world. People who care about people. People who will go out of their way to help people. People who aren't just, you know, keeping tabs to make sure everything's fair all the time. Well, I did this much, so they should do this much, and then I might do this much. People who are open to helping people. People who want to walk with God and use the power of God to help people. That's what the love of God is. That guy cared about that guy for no reason. And when you meet believers, that's what they're like. They care about you. And they don't even have to have a reason to care about you. They're concerned. And if you're in trouble, if you have a need, they're not going to point the finger. The guy didn't say, you shouldn't have fallen among thieves, you dummy. You should have known that those guys were thieves. Just help them. Help them. And that's what's nice about being around believers. Someone who loves always has their needs met because they're always giving. And one of the benefits to walking the love of God is God is always paying you back. God is always sneaking stuff in your back pocket, I like to say, while you're trying to help people. And so someone who loves always has their needs met. The next thing that you notice about believers is they have great joy. Now, here in New Jersey, it's more goofiness than joy, but it's like... That means delight or gladness. Believers are glad for no good reason. Because it comes from the inside. They just seem to be delighted about life, and it has nothing to do with the conditions around them. It's just, it comes from inside of them. Look at 2 Corinthians 7. What's that song? Bubbling, 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 bubbling. Is that about joy? Joy bubbles out of me. People say that about me all the time. Joy is bubbling out of you. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 4. Great is my boldness of speech toward you. Great is my glorying of you. I am filled with comfort. I am exceeding joyful in all our tribulation. That's a weird thing to say, isn't it? Tribulation is pressure. You know, when you get a lot of pressure, that's when you get all bummed out and negative, correcto? Well, not believers. For some reason, believers still are delighted and glad, even under great pressure. And that's because they've seen God help them. They know God will help them again, and they know they're going to be gathered together. They know everything's going to turn out okay, no matter what happens. We already know our end, don't we? Some of us might fall asleep for a while, but we're going to live forever and hang out with James T. Kirk and all sorts of cool people like that together. You know, we're going to be with those people forever. And so no matter what happens, we just have this weird gladness that comes out of us. He was in a lot of tribulation, and he said he was exceeding joyful in that tribulation. And that's because we have God and Christ in us on the inside, and like I said, we've seen God pull things off before. We know he will again, and ultimately, we know we have the victory because we're going to be gathered together with Christ. 4, verse 5, when we were come into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Without were fightings, within were fears. Things sucked there. And yet he just said he was still joyful. That's one of the fruits you'll notice about a believer. Things might suck, and they're still like joyful inside. There's still this positive gladness that comes out of him. Nevertheless, God that comforted those that are cast down comforted us by the coming of Titus. And it goes on. God's always coming through. And so no matter what the situation is, we know that he's going to make it okay. And so we have this joy and gladness inside. We enjoy our lives. I've even seen believers joyful in the mall on Saturday while people bounce off them and push them out of the way and everything like that. And then they pray and lightning came and killed everyone else. No, that was Philippians. Philippians 1. There's got to be some reality to acting like a believer, right? I mean, there's got to be some payoff. It can't all just be play acting and everything. And when you walk with God, when you try to learn how to use your spirit and walk by the spirit and stuff, there's great benefit. There's obvious things that are apparent in your life, the fruit. In Philippians 1, verse 12, Paul was writing this from jail. Can you imagine what the jails were like back then? Roman jails. Were the Romans known to be like really dainty jail keepers and kind to everybody, everything like that? Now, he's writing this from jail, all right? But I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me, that I'm in jail, have fallen out rather under the furtherance of the gospel. It's still okay. The word's still going to move. So my bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace and in all other places. Did he sound all down in the mouth and everything like that? I'm in jail. I can speak the word to prisoners. Right? Next time you go to jail, try to be positive like this, okay? And many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident in my bonds, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ even of envy and strife. Well, some are just preaching Christ to get people on their side. You know, that's that word, aresis, where some guy says, I'm a better teacher, I'm better this, come to my fellowship, mine's the best. You know, that's totally off the word for someone to say, I'm the best teacher, I have the best knowledge, come to my fellowship, it's the very best. But that's what was happening here. And so that's, then the next line is, but I'm bummed out about that. So verse 14, and many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, are much more bold to speak without fear. Some indeed preach Christ even of envy and strife. Some of them are just doing it to get people to follow them. And some also of goodwill, and some for the right reason. The one preached Christ of contention, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my bonds. So I'm very bummed out, and I want to quit. This sucks. But the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. What then? Notwithstanding every way, whether in pretense or in truth, at least Christ is preached, and I therein do what? Rejoice, yea, and what? even though some people were just teaching the word to get at him and draw people away from him, he was still rejoicing. So don't tell me that you can't rejoice in any situation. Because with God and Christ in you, there's more to life than what you see around you, what's going on. And you should be getting more from the God and Christ inside of you than what is happening on the outside. It should be more. It should be more powerful. You understand what I mean? Does that make sense? No? Yes? I don't know. Or maybe this stuff is all a joke and we should be scared and bummed all the time. If there's no God, if God doesn't really help people, be afraid. Be very afraid. But if there is a God and he does help people and he does comfort people, what's that to compare with what people can do on the outside? Isn't God bigger than that? Well, Psalm 5. Oh, I'm totally lost again. Psalm 5. But I'm still rejoicing. I can't remember my name, but I'm rejoicing. I have to go upstairs 5 times every morning before I leave for work to get the things I forget, but I'm rejoicing. It's funny to see who laughs at that. Psalm 5, verse 11. But let all those that put their trust in thee, what? If you say you trust God, rejoice. Because trusting God indicates you have confidence in him. And God doesn't fail people. You know, God will take care of things. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy. Just be blessed. You know, enjoy your life. You know, sometimes it gets very negative, but God says he'll take care of it. And even if, you know, I blow up in front of you, you'll see me at the gathering, won't you? And maybe it'll be a cool effect. But let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy. That's what God says. Because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. We love God. We know he's a wonderful God. He says he'll take care of us. I know things get really negative, but God says to rejoice. Rejoice. And another fruit that a believer has, someone who walks with God and walks by the Spirit, uses his Spirit, is peace. And peace is to be free from all anxiety and care. Apparently, if you believe God and trust God, you're free from all anxiety and care. That's not saying you won't get things won't worry you, but you won't be like a chronically worried, anxious, nail-biting person. I mean, clouds will pass over your mind, but you know they'll go by very quickly. And a believer, according to Galatians, one of the fruit of the Spirit is peace. Great peace. Someone who's free from anxiety and care. Look at Romans 1. The whole concept of God shouldn't make your life miserable. In Romans 1, you know, God says that he wants to take the burdens off your life, not make it worse. Romans 1:7. To all that be in Rome, beloved of God, called saints, grace to you and what? Grace and peace comes from God. Grace is he just favors you. It's like he really likes you. That's why I don't understand how someone who can represent God can treat believers like they suck when God himself likes them. You know? That don't make a sense to me. That doesn't make sense to me. If God is a God of grace, and every time he thinks about me, he thinks of me as his little kid and he likes me, he's one of the definitions of grace is he's leaning towards me. He just kind of likes me. Then how come someone who represents God, you suck so bad? I don't know. And how come people who represent God have really weird hair sometimes on TV? I don't understand that. But here it says what comes from God? Grace and what? Peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. To be free from all anxiety and care because we trust God. And God says he'll take care of stuff, doesn't he? He says it in the manifestations all the time. It's in his word all over the place. Free from care and anxiety. Look at Philippians 4. Verse 6. Be anxious for what? Unless you're a leader. No. Unless you're a parent. Unless it's the holidays. Everyone is an exception, aren't they? Unless you're a teenager. Unless you have tests. Unless you're trying to get into college. Unless you're out of college and trying to get a job. Be anxious for how much? But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made unto God. Give it to God. You know, do you think God's lying here when he says it's available to not be anxious, or that it's he says don't be anxious? You think God is a liar because it's normal to be anxious for a believer? Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, drink beer until you're peaceful. Is that what that says? Give it to God. And look at this. And the peace of God, which passes is better or superior or far excels understanding, which is thinking or reason or every way of thinking. In other words, you give it to God, and of course, every time you pray, it says in the word, you believe. You believe. You give it to God, you believe, and then peace of God. I don't know how he's going to take care of it. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know, but trusting in God, that peace of God, is way, way better than understanding how it's going to happen or, you know, having it in your thoughts, how he's going to do it and stuff like that. You just give it to God and trust that he'll take care of it. It says, in all things whatsoever thou shalt ask in prayer, believing, what? Think that's true? Well, it has to be according to the word. You can't ask God to kill your uncle because God doesn't kill people, right? You can't ask God to lie to somebody. You can't ask God to make someone fall in love with you because he'd have to possess them. And then you'd be married to a zombie or a robot. But if he promises in his word, do you think he'll do it? And that's why believers have great peace, because they think he will. That's why you notice that about him. Look at Mark 4. If you have a bad God, then you should be worried all the time and anxious. Mark 4, verse 36. And when they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there were also with them other little ships. It's like Harbor Light Fellowship. Uh-huh. You know, each fellowship is a boat, and the leader is the captain. Jerry's the admiral in steam. And the bad fellowships are the pirate fellowships. Oh, and the saying is, it's hard to stay afloat if you don't go to boat, because the fellowships are called boats. Don't tell this to Ohio Sean, okay? Please. Sean's over there like, please. We didn't want to hear back about it. If you do, we'll make you walk the plank. And 4:36. Well, little ships, verse 37. And there arose a great storm. There arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full of water. These guys are like fishermen. This was like, if they get scared, it's pretty scary. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and say, Master, don't you care? We're dying. We're dying. He arose and rebuked the sea and said to the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, why are you so fearful? That was some statement, right? Why am I so fearful? Because the boat was full of water and we were sinking in the middle of the lake, maybe? But let's be honest. Is our God a weak God who doesn't really help, like the Gentile gods? You know, sometimes if you're disappointed in your life, maybe you've been trusting too much in people or whatever, or organizations or something, because God does come through. God will take care of things. God can't control people, but he can take care of you, you know? I mean, he can't make somebody do something you want him to do or whatever, but he can take care of you. Or if he can't, let's, like I say, I want to be a Rastafarian this month, by the way. Smoke the spliff. But if he can take care of us, and he will take care of us, we don't even have to be afraid in the middle of a sinking ship in a storm. And Jesus Christ, who was a loving guy, said a pretty amazing thing. Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? Why aren't you persuaded that God will take care of you? How is that? How is that? And he was a loving guy, too. He wasn't being a jerk. How is it that you have no faith? And of course, and they were more afraid. Oh, my gosh. And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, what manner of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Well, he knew God. He walked with God. And if you think God will come through, you have peace about stuff. You have peace about it. Even in a terrible storm. Look at Psalm 46. And you notice that about believers. The house is on fire. Okay, get the water. What if it burns down? We'll get a better one. What if we lose our pictures? We'll take more. You know, like. What if our dog runs away? Don't go after it. We'll get a fish. Psalm 46, verse 1. Did I just reveal a Christmas present? No, a fish. God is our refuge and strength. Is that true? A very present help in trouble? Is that true? Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Consider that. That's Selah. Stop and think about that. Pause and think. So we're not going to be afraid. And because believers trust God and they walk with the Spirit and they know God has come through in the past and will come through, they have peace about stuff. And that's something that you notice about people who believe God, who trust God. They have great love. They're concerned about other people. And they have great joy. They're delighted. They seem to be happy people. But it's not real happiness because it's not conditional on the outside stuff. It's joy. And they have great peace. They're free from all anxiety and care. In Ephesians 4, that's why it's so wonderful to be among people like you, because you do have such great love. And it's so fun to be around you. It's great to be around people who aren't pointing the finger all the time, isn't it? Critical and everything, and I know God, therefore I can think you suck. Very good. Ephesians, people you can make mistakes around and they won't turn their back on you. Ephesians 4, verse 1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called. This is God once again beseeching us that we walk equal to the calling we are called with. We decide we're going to walk like a son of God. Look at Ephesians 5, verse 8. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. We decide we're going to walk like a child of God, like a child of light. We're going to walk by this Spirit he's given us. We're going to walk according to the Word. And we get this fruit in our life. That's how it starts to happen. We get these qualities, this love, this joy, this peace. Look at Colossians 2, Because we get to know God more and more, and we get more confident in Him and more assured in Him. In Colossians 2, verse 6, "As ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in Him." Learn what it is to walk with Him. Learn what the Word says, how to conduct yourself and stuff, and start to walk that way. And as we do that, we get these fruit in our life. And the three that I talked about today were love, which means you just care about people, and you'll even sacrifice of yourself to help people. And joy, which means you're just delighted in any situation. Even if everybody's turned their back on you and everything seems whatever, you have this weird joy. And peace, which means you're free from anxiety, not troubled about stuff. Those are things you notice about believers. All right? Okay.